Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening, and thank you one and all for spending some of your time with us. My guest tonight is Catherine Samuelson, who had such a good time last time, we both decided she should come back. And we're going to talk about meditation experiences. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And tonight is a strange night in the United States. Our elections are a year and a half from now, but for some reason, both of our political parties have revved up, and there are people coming out of the woodwork to be candidates for president, and there's going to be a supposedly debate, although there are so many people involved in it that I can't imagine how there's going to be anything more than political posturing. But the Republican Party has 10 people who are going to be involved in this, and every one of the candidates, every one of these people that would like to be president, has said at least one, if not many, things that are so profoundly, strangely over the top that, as far as I'm concerned, they couldn't possibly get elected. Not just because I think it's over the top, but because I think they have alienated enough people that they couldn't put something together. But here we all are with, I think, all told, 16 candidates on the Republican side, each one of them more, well, frankly, bizarre than the next. If some of you are Republicans and you disagree with me, that's okay. And disagreement is a way that we learn from each other. On the other side, in the Democratic Party, the big name is Hillary Clinton, obviously Bill Clinton's wife, and she was Secretary of State. She's been around a very long time. But fascinating is Bernie Sanders, who it calls himself a democratic socialist. And so he is talking about all the things that will help working people. And it's not crazy stuff. It's the kind of stuff that's being done in Europe, but it's somewhat radical for the United States. And he doesn't have big money backing him, but he's getting huge amounts of money from lots of individual donors. And he keeps getting very large audiences, so large that they have to change the venue for his talks. He obviously has gotten everybody's attention, and lots of people are saying, yeah, the stuff you're talking about, that's what we should be paying attention to. That's the direction we should be going in. And it seems very parallel to what's been going on with Pope Francis, who is doing things that are startling and striking compared to what went on in the Catholic Church for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And he's both changing the church, but also talking about things that I'm totally surprised that any pope would discuss. And he's coming up with these wonderfully humane positions. He's supporting the science behind climate change. He's challenging some of the problems in capitalism. And that's all the stuff that Bernie's doing. So here we have an international leader of one of the largest religious organizations in the world, and this man who's been in American politics for 40 years as an independent, but you know, in many ways is coming out of nowhere and saying things that are surprising to many people, and he's getting tremendous support. And this is very much in keeping with what's going on the planet, which is the old ways, the ways of darkness, the ways of control, the ways of pain and suffering are losing their power and falling away to be replaced by a new sense of cooperation and love and working together so that things work for everybody. Something that, you know, has been talked about for a very long time, but we are now right in that moment. And the planet is also changing. The frequency, the base frequency of the planet has doubled. We're getting hit by huge amounts of solar radiation from solar flares. There's all kinds of things going on most people are not paying attention to. There are lots of changes happening, and Bernie is one of the signs that that's going on. And wouldn't it be amazing if, in spite of all the political machinery and the big money that flows through American elections, if the people just said, no, we want this change. We want Bernie. Lots of change going on. That's just one indication of change. And there's a story that I love to tell because it really explains how a seemingly small change can ripple through a group and then suddenly change everything. It's called the 100th Monkey. And it's a story, this is a true story about researchers in the Pacific who were monitoring the behavior of a small band of a particular kind of monkey. And they noticed that one female monkey did something that had never been done before. Their primary food was yams, and this female monkey went down to the ocean and rinsed it off before she gave it to her kids. Nobody had ever seen it before. And she taught it to other female monkeys. The children learned it from the mothers. Eventually, most of the monkeys, if not all the monkeys on that island, were doing this new behavior. Simple little thing. They washed off their food. Here's where it gets interesting. Thousands of miles away, they were also observing monkeys on another island. There was no connection in any way between the two groups of monkeys. And suddenly, spontaneously, the monkeys on the second island started washing their food with the exact same behavior. And they call it the 100th monkey because the idea is that there's some number within any population which, when you reach it, suddenly changes the consciousness of the entire group, and there is no separation, and everybody suddenly knows and understands it and changes. And it's a relatively small percentage. The number that gets thrown around is 10% of population. Wouldn't it be amazing if we had a 100th monkey phenomenon in the United States and had a very different approach to the politics and economics of this country? And wouldn't it be amazing if that also had a ripple effect and affected other countries and the way the economy of the world is run? Will it happen? I don't know. But that 100th monkey principle has been demonstrated and proven many, many, many times. So as much as people don't like the feeling of being called monkeys, I hope that we will learn, and enough of us will learn, that suddenly everybody will know that cooperation and love is what needs to happen. And that's tonight's metaphysical musing. And now we get to hang out with Catherine Samuelson and talk about what exactly happens during meditation.
Many interesting things, and sometimes nothing.
Well, exactly, and that's why I thought it was a fascinating topic. And when Catherine was on last time, we just had such a good time that both of us decided we should have some more fun. And the topic that we came up with was the kinds of experiences that people have in meditation, because it's really a wide range of things. And a lot of people really have no idea what meditation is or what the experiences can be.
Well, and the other thing, David, is that it exists in many traditions in a number of forms. It's not mm-hmm. just sitting cross-legged staring at a wall.
Right.
You know, and there's a Christian tradition, there's a Jewish tradition, you know, it's not just right. Buddhist, it's not just Hindu, it's...
Right, and what most people are familiar with is taken from Hindu and Buddhist traditions. Sitting meditation, cross-legged, might be saying a mantra to occupy your mind, might be focusing on an object or a flame. Those are very traditional Eastern kinds of meditations. But tell us a little bit about the other traditions that you mentioned.
Well, you know, because there's a whole, to me, meditation, prayer, contemplation, it's a continuum. And you can dip in and dip out. A book that I really like is Sally Kempton's Meditation for the Love of It. And she talks about if something's not working, try something else. That everybody has a different gateway. I mean, some of it can be in the Christian tradition, one of the ways to meditate is to say the Jesus prayer over and over again.
Right.
Which is, Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy upon me, a sinner. You know, or you might do a walking meditation. I once heard a talk by a Buddhist monk. And he said, oh, just sit in a chair and be comfortable.
Yeah. Right.
So there's many forms of it. And, you know, sort of riffing on the 100th monkey, there's the thing in Eastern meditation, they talk about the monkey mind.
Right.
And that's the time you'll have times you'll sit down and your meditation time will be over and you go, what? Huh? Where? And there are other times it's like, stop mind, stop mind, stop. You know, it's like the mind's just like whizzing all over again. And when I have those days, I just say, okay, the important part is I showed up and it's not happening today.
Right.
So, and it just, you can see things, not see things. What's your experience, David?
Well, it depends because I do a number of different things. Since I do shamanic work, and that's a very active internal, basically visualization process,
mm-hmm.
Although it's more visceral than that. I go into what would be considered for most people a meditative state, and I'm intentionally looking at things and changing things within that vision.
Mm-hmm.
It's called shamanic journeying. And you know, one of the things about people that do this work is you're kind of in the edge of that state a lot, which is why you can look at something and psychically see a whole lot more information than most people do. So the phrase is living in two worlds, being in the physical world, but also being in the world of spirit at the same time.
Right.
And so it makes it hard for me to define some of the things I do as meditation experiences or not, because they're in that shamanic framework. But I will sometimes just sit and be quiet. I will sometimes, in the Kundalini Reiki lineage, there's a little thing called balance, where you put your fingertips together and you invoke basically an energy flow that balances your energy system. And I'll use that as a way to get grounded and meditate almost anywhere, because I can get the energy flowing instantly with that.
And there's just a whole slew of traditions. Like I have a few books in Jon Kabat-Zinn. And it's Kabat-Zinn for people listening or aren't familiar with him. He has one of his books is Mindfulness for Beginners, and it's about mindfulness meditation. And he's at the University of Massachusetts Hospital, Worcester, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I like about it, he says, every meditation's a new beginning. So if right. the one that you had yesterday wasn't so productive, and you can go in and you can do deep breathing and imagine your body. Speaking of the 100th monkey and what you were talking about, I meant to say this first, is I had a meditation image of fully enlightened Tibetan monks who were glowing with energy and light, agreeing to become part of the collective of the Borg, to change the Borg consciousness.
Well, and not everybody may be familiar with that particular idea from the Star Trek Next Generation series, but it was a group mind. It was individual beings, but they had a hive mind. So
and
they didn't have
the way it happened is they would capture people and they essentially attached things to the people, so they essentially became like robots.
Right, right, and that's where the wonderful phrase "resistance is futile" comes from, which I always thought was about Microsoft, but.
Yeah, and I was working a book festival in Woodstock, Vermont called Bookstock, and it's like with anything, there are true believers, and I ran into some true believers about meditation, and this one woman looked at and said, "Yes, I meditate, but not from a book, because I have the book Opening the Heart," and I'm like, "But this is different," and she just walked on, and then I entered this conversation with the woman at the next booth and someone else and about meditation. And I said, "Well, as Oprah says, if all you can manage is a minute or two, that's what you do." And she said, "Oh, no, that's not what you need." And the question was like, "What?" It was like, "You need a teacher."
Right. And there are a lot of people that feel that you need a tradition and a teacher, or you're not doing the real thing.
I'm of the mind is if that's what you need, that's fine. But to decree that for everybody,
right,
that's like saying everybody must be on a raw food diet or a paleo diet or must be vegan or, you know.
Right. And there are people that say that too, obviously.
Right.
They don't often say it to me more than once. Yeah, because my feeling both from personal experience and the obvious, there cannot be one diet that's good for everybody's metabolism.
Right.
Different people need different things, and some people will thrive on whatever it is that you're excited about, and other people won't.
And that's, I think, the same thing with meditation, because there's so many traditions and so many methods.
Mm-hmm.
And again, going back to the book I like, Meditation for the Love of It, it's like not the same thing doesn't work for everybody.
Right.
And I just started on my own, you know, and when I first started, I would see spinning triangles and, you know, pyramids edged in neon colors and rushing waterfalls. And I would be doing, you know, hand movements and arm movements. And it was like really, and now it's just sort of like very quiet.
When I first started meditating, I realized later I was seeing the astral plane and I saw some really scary stuff. And somehow managed to sit with it and say, well, I'm not crazy, so this must be something I don't understand yet. But yeah, you can have a wide range of experiences, but you know, for some people it's playing music. They will get into a meditative state, to an altered state. It's how Einstein did his thought experiments. There are people that have that experience with exercise or sports. You know, the people who do long distance running, I think, do it as much for the meditative aspects of it as anything else. I know fishermen who will tell you they don't care if they catch anything. They just want to be out there standing in the middle of the stream, listening to the water and the birds and being out in the sun. And if they catch something, terrific. And they have a physical meditation of flicking the rod in a certain way, which keeps them focused in a certain way.
So there are many, many, many ways to get into a meditative frame, a meditative frame of mind. And one isn't better than the others. It's just a matter of sitting meditation is a bit more portable and easy. You don't have to go for a walk in the woods. You don't have to do all the other things, but they create right. the same kinds of activity in the brain and the same kinds of experiences for people.
And there was a period of time where I couldn't tell if I'd fallen asleep
mm-hmm.
or I had just gone so deep that it was like, what, huh?
Right.
And I felt a little better about it because Sally Kempton tells this story. She had a student who he would fall asleep every time in meditation, man. He
right.
just, every day he would fall asleep, and he was determined he was not going to fall asleep. And so he drank a whole bunch of coffee before meditation one day because he was determined he was not going to fall asleep. And he went into meditation, and he had this image of this woman in this long blue gown, and she was sweeping. She was sweeping, sweeping, sweeping. And she turns around and looks at him and says, what are you doing awake? I do my best work when you're asleep.
Right, right.
And so he goes like, okay. And then he didn't try to fight it anymore. And then at some point he stopped falling asleep.
It's also a brainwave thing because the deepest level of meditation is delta brainwaves. And that's the same brainwaves as deepest sleep, REM sleep. So ideally, you get into that state and you don't fall asleep, but it's right on that edge. And part of it is experience, and part of it is how tired you are.
You know, and yes, optimally, you know, like the really, you know, gangbuster meditators, they'll meditate for an hour at a time. Most of us don't have that kind of time in our lives.
And it's not something that you can start out doing. I mean,
right.
most people can't hold the meditative state for that long. It takes a while to learn how to do it.
Right. And I was listening. Krista Tippett has a really interesting program called On Being, and you can go to onbeing.org and listen to the podcast. It's also on NPR, you know, National Public Radio. And she was, I can't remember who she was talking to, but it was about the subject of meditation. And she said she decided what she could fit into her life was meditating for the 6 minutes her cup of tea was steeping.
Whatever works. Yeah, I do Tai Chi while the water's boiling.
So, you know, I don't think people should have to feel that because this author, Sally Kempton, meditates for an hour in the morning and meditates for an hour at night, that that's what you have to do.
Right.
Ultimately, I think she's right that the goal is to connect with our higher selves, that ideally. But for many people, it's to become calmer, more at peace.
Right, right.
And
it will change over time. So it depends what's going on. Some people go into it for reasons of their own spiritual quest or their spiritual angst in a particular moment that they really need to go into a quiet space and have that conversation, that moment. Other people will do it because it just, you know, it's part of everybody else is doing it around you, so you want to find out what it is. Is one of the things I've seen a whole lot. So there are many, many, many reasons. We're going to go to a break soon, and I want to make sure people know how to find you online. What's your website?
KatherineSamuelson.com, which is KatherineSamuelson.
And you just came out with a book recently. What's the name of the book?
Opening the Heart Meditations on How to Be. There's information on the website, and it's on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble, and there's a Nook, Kindle, and iBook version as well.
Of course there are. how could there not be in this day and age?
There's people who probably wouldn't, but it didn't seem to me a wise thing to ignore.
And it's a beautiful book.
Besides being fascinating, it's a really beautiful publication. So I recommend it to everybody. We talked about it more last time. So we will be back shortly, unless, of course, we get taller, with my guest, Catherine Samuelson, here on the Farkas Files on Empower Radio. Don't go nowhere. We're going to have more fun.
Lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called inventnow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cat stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the inventnow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, is that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called inventnow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the Instado. Just imagine, you just put it over your head, like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side, then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my guest, Catherine Samuelson. And we're talking about meditation. And I wanted to jump back at to what you were saying about repeating prayer as a meditation method, because that's used all over the world, and the parallels really are quite striking sometimes.
Yes.
So in Hindu tradition, they would repeat a mantra and count beads on what they call a mala. In Catholic tradition, they would say one of the many prayers and count the beads on a rosary.
Right, and there's like There's like, and you do it a certain number of times. Like mm-hmm. the malas had traditionally have what 181 beads or something, and there's a specific number of beads as well on a rosary. So I'm sure there right. are other similar devices throughout the world. The Buddhists right. also use the malas, don't they?
I don't know as much about Buddhist meditation, but it's fascinating to me how parallel many of the traditions are, including things like lighting candles and having icons or statues. You know, all of those things are all over the world, and typically the statues have the same story and personality with a different name. Because they're archetypal energies. They're real spiritual beings. They just were given different names for that particular culture. So the other thing that I've used, I don't know if you've played with this, is meditation tapes, which actually affect the brain waves.
No, but I have at times used meditation CDs, so to speak, or music.
Yeah.
I mean, Jonathan Goldman has some good ones. Steve Halpern
mm-hmm.
has some good ones. Steve has one. I'm sorry, it's getting later in the evening. Steve has CDs that are based on chakra tones.
Yep.
So you can do chanting for the chakras. Jonathan Goldman, one of the ones I like, he's got a CD called The Angel and the Goddess, and one half of the CD is based on Saraswati, who is a Hindu goddess, and the other is on an archangel that he calls Shamael, but might also be Metatron.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a weekend with Jonathan Goldman and his wife, and there was a room full of people chanting to, I think it was the angel one based on Shamael, and it was incredibly powerful.
Yes. Yes, invoking the name of an angel or any other being and having a whole bunch of people focus at the same time is an intense experience.
A room full of people, and a similar thing, I suppose it might have been based on Hindu practice of kirtan, which mm-hmm. I think is probably a meditative practice where to music you chant, like
right.
Om Mani
there
Padme
are,
Hum.
There are a lot of different chanting traditions and music to go along with them, and kirtan is the Hindu one. But even drumming circles that are more based on Native American tradition are very much the same thing, as using the rhythm as a way to change your brain waves. And draw
right,
you
or
into
even Gregorian
to a focus.
Chant. You know, I'm sure if you went onto YouTube or Pandora and put in Gregorian chant, and you listen
oh,
to
yeah.
Gregorian chant, and it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. The meditation technology that I used was, it's from HoloSync, but there's a way to control brainwaves using sound. And what they found is that master meditators, you know, the people that have been in caves for 20 or 30 years, what happens is that there's more connections between the two hemispheres across the corpus callosum. So the brain becomes integrated. And using those sound technologies, they can bring you into the brain waves of deeper and deeper meditation. And what they found was, it was kind of like a drug. Its effect would wear off and you'd need more of it. But what they worked out was, if you change the carrier frequency, not the frequency that's creating the brain waves, but the underlying frequency below it, you could keep getting more and more effect from the same brainwave frequency.
Hmm.
And they have 14 years of deeper and deeper levels, and I just got the last one. I just bottomed out. I was like, guys, what do I do now? And it basically, they can't make the frequencies any lower and still have you hear it on a headset.
But when I went to Ireland in 2002, it was this group of women. is based on women's spirituality, but we had these instances of where we were toning, which is sort of a chanting, but you're just making sound. You're not using vowels and consonants, just it's pure sound. And we would get in sync together, and it would just go on, and suddenly we just all stop together, which to me was a very meditative practice. And I also took a week workshop. There's a place called Roe Camp and Conference Center in Western Massachusetts. Yes, since you're in Western Massachusetts. And the woman who was teaching the workshop had what she called a bone meditation, where you would sit up straight, and then you would tilt your head from like the occipital bone, so you're not like tipping your head down from the base of the neck, you're tipping your head from the top of your neck, and getting your chin so it's right down on your, you know, on your neck. And then we, you know, she had us chant Om, and you could feel the vibrations in your bones.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many, many techniques.
All kinds of techniques. And that is one of the reasons that people say having a teacher is useful, is there are people that know it and have done it themselves for a long time and have done it with lots and lots of individuals and groups, and they can teach you a lot of stuff. On the other hand, you can get into that meditative state all kinds of ways on your own. And it might make you, it's whatever people are attracted to.
Right, and you might be useful to have a meditation teacher at a certain point and not others. It just, it just, when people say, well, this is what you need. I have this reaction like, really?
I have that reaction all the time too, and it's, there's part of me that's still an adolescent from Brooklyn. What? You telling me what to do?
I'm just a stubborn person.
Who are you talking to?
Yeah, it's like, wanna bet? Watch me.
Well, there's also the challenge aspect of it, absolutely. You can't do it that way? Really? We'll see.
But there's some books that could be useful. There's an author that I have read some of his books. It's Neil, N-E-I-L, Douglas hyphen Klotz, K-L-O-T-Z.
Yes.
And he is an Arabic Hebrew scholar.
He was on the show about a year and a half or so ago. Absolutely fascinating stuff that he does.
Right. And his books will have what he calls body prayers. And he gives little written instructions on, okay, sit and breathe deeply and blah, blah, blah. So that could be a source for someone.
Right. It's also fascinating because he has audios as well. It's fascinating listening to excerpts from not necessarily the Bible. It's usually the Dead Sea Scrolls because they were written in Aramaic. But it's the Gospels and other prayers that people know in English from the umpteenth translation, but hearing them said in the original language. And sung in the original language is absolutely amazing.
And then if, like, his Prayers of the Cosmos book, where he gives alternate translations of the Lord's Prayer, because there's some, the meanings of words in Hebrew, Arabic, and Aramaic are much deeper and have, like, more layers and layers of meaning.
They have multiple meanings. There are also intentionally used puns. There's numerology to the series of letters in each word, which changes the meaning.
Isn't it called gematria or something?
Say again?
I think it's gematria or something. But, yeah, you're right. There's
yeah, numbers. So, you know, the biggest shift in meaning happened in translating into Greek, because it didn't have the same tenses as Aramaic. It didn't have a lot of the concepts in the Aramaic and Jewish point of view were very different from the Greek. So they tended to put gods on mountains and everything in the future.
And then it got translated into Latin.
Then it got into Latin, and then it got multiple translations into English. And the problem with putting things in the future is that in Aramaic, there's a tense which is all time simultaneously. It's basically an eternal now. And so when you say that God said something and it's happening now and will always be happening constantly, it's very different than saying it'll happen in the future.
Right.
So, yeah, the meanings and the sounds of them are absolutely fascinating. And the
that could be one of the pairs of meditations in opening the heart. And it was channeled from the angels and mm-hmm. guides. One of the pairs is there is no time at the heart of the center of the universe. Be there.
Right.
And the other part of the pair is there is time on the human plane. Be here.
Right, right. And that's time is a function of the physical world. You have to have something physical to measure in order for there to be time. So as soon as you shift your focus to the spiritual realm or energy or however you want to put that, time disappears. And that's why the meditation focus is looking to be in a moment of eternal now. To be totally present now, because you leave the physical world behind for that moment. And there are so many parallels to it and so many fascinating explanations of how that works. But that's ultimately the goal of all of it, is to just be completely present in this moment and time disappears.
Or as Ram Dass says, be here now.
Right, right.
Which I quote the title from time to time, but I have not read the book.
Well, you know, he was a character of his time. So
right.
A lot of the stuff he says fit perfectly for what was going on and what people were talking about at the time. And he's a fascinating guy who became more and more interesting as he became more spiritual and even as he got sick.
Is he still with us, or has he?
I'm almost sure he's gone.
Mm.
But as he became ill, he went deeper into meditation. So some of the stuff he said in his later writings were really amazing.
But I let people know there's this whole range of experience.
Yeah, that's
and nobody, it's your experience. You can't repeat somebody else's. So if you're going to be doing meditation, it's good to read about other people's experiences so you can know that there's this whole range of things out there. But
right.
If it doesn't happen for you, it doesn't mean you're not successful.
Right. And it's also helpful to be around people who are experienced, so that if you have a really strange experience, there's someone who can say, oh, that happens.
Right, I was...
Don't worry about it. That happens.
Yeah, you know, because I just sort of had to figure it out when I was starting out on my
right.
own, and suddenly my arms would move in these strange positions, you know?
Right.
They'd get
and
stuck.
And did you figure out that you were doing mudras?
Eventually, mudras and then kriya, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And
for the people that have never heard that, in the Hindu tradition, there are specific hand positions that have to do with moving energy and invoking... you know, different people from the pantheon. And you see them in all the statues in Hindu temples and that kind of stuff, all the exotic hand positions. And in a deep enough meditation, those will happen spontaneously.
Right. And I finally, like, can I move now? And I'd still be stuck in this weird position. And I'm like, I get it. I'm not in control. You can let me go now. But that might not happen to somebody. And, you know, whatever images that you see, as I said, like when I started out, it was like all these spinning triangles and pyramids and, you know, rushing waterfalls and soaring to the top of mountains, and yeah. Which is a little scary to me. I must have fallen off.
Colors changing constantly.
But that doesn't mean that you'll have the same images.
Right. And it doesn't mean that you'll have exactly the same thing as other people, although there tends to be a continuum of them, so that there are experiences early in meditation practice for people that are beginners that are similar to other people at that stage, and at deeper stages you have different kinds of experiences, kind of like everything else in life.
You know, it's all based on who you are, what your life experience is, what your, you know, if you're having issues, you know, with illness or not. I've had moments where I'm walking across the room and they're like, hi there. And it's like I'm stuck in this moment of bliss, you know. And sometimes meditation is bliss and sometimes it's a lot of work.
Right, right. The other thing is we live in a culture, as Dr. Bernie Siegel says, if you pray, you're talking to God, that's okay. But if you get a message from God, if you hear God, you're considered crazy. You know, it's only a one-way street's okay. And
so I guess in the work that we do, we're considered wacko, huh?
Well, when I have conversations with psychiatrists, I start the conversation with, you need to know that I have at least four diagnoses in the DSM-5, which is the diagnostic manual, except I'm not crazy. I have those experiences, but I have a fully integrated functioning life. So we need to be able to set that aside so you can look at the experiences without judging them, because they live in a world in which hearing a voice or seeing something is considered a hallucination and is an indication there's something wrong.
And on occasions, they're right.
And in some cases, they're right. And in other cases, it means something is very right. And you're communicating with something that they don't have any clue about. I worked on locked psych units several times, and it's pretty strange being able to see who the voices are when people are talking to their voices, and you know, why people are having their struggles and who the conversations are with. Like, oh, this is interesting.
And I bet you didn't say a lot of that out loud, did you?
No, especially when I had to clear a ghost out of someone's room so they would go to sleep. Yeah, she was like, there's a snake in my bed. And I said, have you ever seen him before? No. Okay, let me see what I can do. And then, of course, you come back to the nursing station and they say, what happened? And say, oh, I talked to her. She went to bed. My joke always was we only had one padded room. We needed it for the patients.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't want them to decide they wanted to lock me up.
Right, right, or lose the job. But it certainly came in handy a lot of the time. Just couldn't talk about it.
Because probably some of them were so open that while they were crazy, some of it was actually,
well,
real.
As somebody said, crazy is not being able to wipe your own butt. When your life no longer works and you can't carry out activities of daily living and be in the world in a safe way, we call it crazy and scoop you up. That may be that you're dangerous or whatever it is. But in other cultures, they either would have notice these people very early as mediums and have them trained, or they would have, you know, there are many, many ways that they could have been approached. I mean, England is very loving of their eccentrics. And the United States tends not to be very good at tolerating eccentrics, much less supporting them. So it's very interesting, the whole thing about what's crazy And what we should do about it is really complicated and fascinating in so many ways. Yeah, crazy.
Crazy, not crazy. You know, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean you don't have real enemies.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And in a situation in which there are two people in the room, one is identified as the patient and one is identified as the psychiatrist, and the patient has an experience of there being a third being in the room that is part of the experience,
mm-hmm.
but the psychiatrist doesn't. So to the patient, the psychiatrist is crazy. And to the psychiatrist, because the patient identifies there being a third person that couldn't possibly be there, the patient is crazy.
Well, look what happened to Joan of Arc.
Right. And then it basically gets down to power struggle, and the person with the power gives the person without power drugs and shuts it all down. But, you know, you can get rid of the experience of the voices, but you also get rid of most of the juiciness of a person's personality. So, we don't manage people that are different in this society very well.
We want everybody to be neurotypical.
Neurotypical. Oh, haven't heard that one.
We seem to have wandered from meditation, haven't we?
We have.
Probably it's as much my responsibility
as related spiritual
is.
Experiences. And as usual, we still have a whole lot more we could talk about, but we're running out of time. So tell everybody again what your website is.
It's KatherineSamuelson.com, KatherineSamuelson.com. I should have named it WisdomSeeker.com or something so I wouldn't have to spell it all the time.
You can always do that and have it. Anyway, I can tell you how to do it. And the name of the book again?
Opening the Heart, Meditations on How to Be.
Fantastic, Catherine. Thank you so much. What a delight.
Well, thank you. I had a great time.
And as the saying goes, we really must do this again sometime.
Sure.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. It was great.
And if you've gotten at all curious about this guy, David, what does he do? You can go to househealing.com, and cleverly hiding in plain view on the contact tab is every conceivable technology I could figure out to let you get in touch with me, plus my scheduling calendar. I do a free 20-minute phone consultation to take a look at what's going on with a person, place, situation, whatever it happens to be, and see how my work might be helpful. If you want more information about the show, you can find all of that at thefarkasfiles.com. Again, so clever we are. And all the details about the show are there, plus the archive of 4.5 years of fascinating interviews. The show is also streaming on Empower Radio. You can listen to the archive on thefarkasfiles.com. We're also on TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and iTunes Podcasts. So you can find us all over the place. And the Farkas Files, Empower Radio is a 24/7 platform of wonderful shows, but Farkas Files is on every night at 9 p.m. with the live show being recorded on Thursdays. And we're very excited that there's going to be a new app for iPhones and Androids that's going to make it much, much cooler to be able to listen directly to the show. So we will be announcing that as soon as it becomes available, which should be very soon from the rumors. So fun stuff going on. Again, thank you so much for spending some time with me. It's very exciting. Somebody sent me a message and said, I take you on my walks every day. You keep me sane. And I was like, that's a pretty big responsibility, but it's really nice to hear. So whatever it is, however you fit us in and whatever it does for you, I am very excited to share the show with you and share some time with you. Until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.